Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. Hello, listeners, and welcome to the sixth episode of my talking blog. I'm broadcasting this from Belmore, New York, on Sunday, July 19, 2020. My name is Linda Gore Nanos. I'm the author of 40 Years of PMS, but feel free to call me Notorious LGN, as per the nickname given to me by one book reviewer. Today's blog talk is about raising children. You may be listening to this as a young mother, a grandmother, an aunt, and your perspective could be different depending on your stage in life. But all of us know someone who's raising a baby or child. The title of the chapter is From the Backseat of the Gladiator. You'll find out soon enough what the Gladiator was. When I was writing 40 Years of PMS, I had a feedback group, and I really enjoyed the stories shared by other women about their inexperienced mothering. You'll hear some of those later. I was the youngest person in my extended family with almost no opportunity to interact with babies and toddlers. As a result, my older child, my son Ian, took the brunt of the inexperience. You might ask, how clueless was I? Well, to give you an example, I was fired from my first babysitting job. I was a teenager, and I didn't know how to diaper the baby. Back then, we used cloth diapers with safety pins. We didn't have disposable diapers with self-adhesive. So I took off the dirty diaper and cleaned the baby. He was squirming and crying, and I couldn't get the diaper back on with a pin, and I was afraid I would stick him, so I just calmed him down and covered him up. And when the parents came home and asked, how's everything, I said, fine, and I never told them that he was in the crib without a diaper on. I'm sure they had to strip down the crib and change the bedding, and I was never called back to babysit. For me, having children was like boot camp. It was a crash course on babies and parenting. I think young mothers today have access to more information. There are so many apps. We had one main source. It was Dr. Benjamin Spock, Baby and Child Care. He was the know-it-all pediatrician, not to be confused with Mr. Spock of Star Trek. I never wanted to get ahead of myself. I learned what I needed to know when I needed to know it. When it was toilet training, well, I learned about that. We had a potty chair that we moved around to wherever the toddlers were playing. When they had to go, it was right there for them. This annoyed my neighbor, who had a deck, and he had dinner parties out on his deck, and my kids were pooping in the potty chair in their sandbox. Not appreciated. I'm thankful that none of my shortcomings resulted in serious damage. One time I buckled Ian into the infant seat, but I forgot to buckle the infant seat onto the car seat. It wouldn't have helped if I had taken one of those courses they give today about how to properly fasten your child into a car seat, because I knew that the infant seat had to be hooked onto the car seat. I just failed to do it. I was scattered. There were so many things to get into the car, the diaper bag, the kids, the kid, the toys. It was just, wow. So I was lucky that I didn't have an accident, but when I rounded the corner, Ian disappeared from my rearview mirror. I pulled over and found him upside down in his car seat. So here's a tip. When you screw up like that, you smile and act like it was part of the plan. I said, wasn't that fun? And he smiled back. The good news was that he couldn't talk yet, because my next big screw-up was after he learned to say a few words. I bought a new car with automatic locking doors. I put him in the car seat, this time correctly, hooked him in. I had turned on the car to let the air conditioning start, and I locked the passenger door, walked around to the driver's side, only to find that it had locked at the same time. So I looked through the window at my key in the ignition, and the blood drained from my face. I was outside of my parents' house, so all the neighbors came out, and one had a hanger, and we managed to open up the car. So once again, I put on that smiley, cheerful face and asked Ian if he had had fun. All the parents were waving to you, all the neighbors. So he seemed to have enjoyed it, and when he arrived home, he was very enthusiastic about stringing together three words. Mommy, car door, uh-oh. So Nick wanted to know, my husband, Linda, can you fill me in on the uh-oh part of Ian's story? Well, he was rightfully concerned about my lack of parenting experience. He was the oldest of six children, and his youngest sibling was born when he was a freshman in college. Child care was second nature to him. Now, that doesn't mean that I accepted all of his approaches to child care, but when I disagreed, I didn't have the wealth of experience to back up my arguments. I would have to find support for my position, usually in baby and child care. Once Ian put a vitamin up his nose, and by the way, he never admitted it. Every time I said, did you put the vitamin up your nose? He just kept repeating, there's a vitamin in my nose. I was ready to call 911. My husband went and got a pepper shaker and put pepper in his nose. Ian sneezed out the vitamin. Now, I've never read that before or after in any book. What was reassuring was to hear the stories from my 40 years of PMS feedback group and learning that my goofs were pretty much in the range of normal. One woman talked about carrying a hanger in her diaper bag because she had locked her kids in the car multiple times. Baby wipes, check. Diaper, check. Hanger, check. I did it once and I learned from my lesson. Another woman talked about using a car key to fish out an object from her child's nose. So it turned out that I wasn't the worst. I learned a lot from sharing with the mother's group I was in when the kids were little. I'm very big on sharing. Maybe you might call me an oversharer, especially if you read my book. Well, we talked a lot about how not to stigmatize our children. Ian had his hand in his pants a lot. I didn't want him to get hung up on that. So I told him to please take his hand out of his pants so that he wouldn't stretch out the pants. He didn't develop a complex about his body, but he became very neurotic about his clothing. One time, Ian was watching me getting ready for work, and he saw me put on the stockings. He figured out that I wore socks when I stayed home and put on stockings when I went to work. He would ask me not to put on my stockings. Here's where I need a sad face emoji. It tears at my heart. And one day he told me that he wanted to put on a pair of stockings. I said, well, boys don't wear stockings. That's when he said he was going to sneak into my room at night and put them on. I thought, what have I just done? I have set the bar really low. All I want to do is keep my kids off the psychiatrist's couch when they become adults. It's hard to find the right balance when you're trying to teach your kids things. So we wanted to teach them about stranger danger. And we had those conversations about there are bad people out there who could harm you, and you can't just go anywhere with a stranger. So when Ian was preparing for his first day at preschool, I coached him about getting onto the bus. We play-acted the door opening up and me kissing him goodbye and waving to him as he rode off with the children. So everything was fine until the actual day came. The bus pulled up, the door opened, and there in the driver's seat was a stranger. And as you know, you don't go anywhere with a stranger. He leaped from the ground in a gravity-defying move and managed to wrap both legs around my waist. I had to peel him off until the driver could make friends with him and was no longer a stranger. The next year, when he was going to kindergarten by bus, he was a small child in stature, and he disappeared in the bus seat. The driver didn't see him and drove right past the bus stop, thinking there was nobody else on the bus. Instead of saying something, he hid, thinking he was, in his words, stolen. We called the school, which contacted the bus in transit, and the driver called out his name and told him his mommy was looking for him. Ian sheepishly answered from the back of the bus. Yes, it's hard to find the right balance of instilling awareness and not frightening your kid. So always keep in mind that we never know what will become a formative and lasting part of our child's personality and experiences. Here's a passage from the book. When Ian was 7 or 8 years old, he landed the role of the chicken in a play alongside his sister, who was the cow. Rhea had her outfit to a T, down to the cowbell around her neck. For Ian's costume, I bought a bright yellow sweatsuit and yellow wool cap. In a dime store, I found yellow feather dusters, which I took apart and glued to the sweatsuit. Right there in the same cleaning aisle, there was a pair of yellow duster mitts to cover his hands. When he walked out on stage, his scarlet-red face was the only part of him that wasn't daffodil yellow. End of passage. While my daughter went on to have leading roles in high school theater plays, my son never set foot on a stage again. I believe children are born with their own personality and their own life mission, and we want to promote their becoming who they are meant to be. The best way is to encourage them and always tell them you're proud of them when they accomplish something. Sometimes their decisions are not in harmony with us, and that's when you have to step back and try not to be judgmental, as long as they're not hurting something, hurting someone else or themselves. My husband and I are nonviolent people, and we didn't want our children to play with guns. We had made that decision before we even had children. But our son turned everything he played with into a gun, and we eventually gave in and bought him a toy gun. Our daughter was drawn to jewelry and took an early liking to diamonds in a consumer catalog. She exclaimed she liked the white ones before she even knew what they were called, and despite the fact that I didn't own diamond jewelry. She knew what she liked and what she wanted very early on. The most difficult part of parenting for me was dividing my time between two children who sometimes wanted to test who I loved best. On one Mother's Day, my daughter, now an adult, gave me a mug that said, "Mom, I love how we don't need to say it out loud that I'm your favorite child." Oh boy, I discreetly put it in the kitchen cabinet towards the back, but it didn't go unnoticed, by my son. The firstborn is always going to be jealous when a new baby comes along and steals the show. That was his show exclusively up to that point. My son's personality changed when my daughter was born. He became a lot louder. I guess he thought he needed to be heard. He remained that way for the rest of his life, and we still make a joke and remind him at age 37 to use his indoor voice. You may be concerned, as you have a second or a third more children, that the younger ones are not getting enough attention. But children learn by observing, and they can watch your interactions with other siblings and also watch what the other siblings do. They become more independent because you're not paying so much attention, so you may actually be doing them a favor by not being solely focused on them. This is not to say that it's okay to ignore them, to check on your Instagram account on your cell phone, because there's way too much of that going on. But when you're busy taking care of your family and your home, it's okay to let them entertain themselves. In my 40 years of PMS sharing group, one of the women who was a nurse and who had actually taught Mommy and Me groups talked about the jealousy issue. She shared a memory that when her toddler son bit her infant daughter, she chased him and bit him on the arm and asked how he liked it. That just goes to show you that when maternal instincts kick in, they override any amount of professional training. I learned through sharing groups that whether we're experienced or inexperienced, trained or oblivious, feeling our way. So be easy on yourself and forgive mistakes you make. You can train in a flight simulator, but there's nothing like taking off in a real jet. Parents have different parenting styles, so if you're co-parenting, keep that in mind so you can be tolerant of your partner's parenting style. I was always taking the kids to programs, library, community, whatever was available. But Nick's parenting style was to do what he loved to do and make room for them. He loved to fish, so he bought a boat with a little cabin so he could go out for several hours and feed them and give them a nap. He loved to garden, so he made a sandbox for them to be outside with him. They were always filthy when I came home. I had to hose them down and shampoo their hair. They had lots of pets, and they learned to be compassionate to living things. My daughter was obsessed with animals, and she used to scoop up water from the canal with jellyfish, and they would be her pet for the day until I made her pour the water back. She had guinea pigs in her room. We had a rabbit, cats, a rescue turtle, and a bird. It was always a menagerie. In our neighborhood, many of the children went to summer camp, and they asked why our kids didn't go to camp, and Nick said, "Tell them they go to Camp Nick." They also asked us why we didn't take family vacations. Family vacation is an oxymoron to me. And here's where the gladiator comes in. Nick thought it would be a great idea to purchase an extra long van with captain chairs in the back and a TV screen for the kids to watch while we were cruising around. The name of this van was The Gladiator. It was written in bold letters across the top of the front windshield. The only problem, well, besides having a van named The Gladiator, was that every road trip was a nightmare. Instead of the children enjoying a show in the back seat when we were out for a drive, they would whine or fight, and then Nick and I would bicker over how to deal with it. I would want to intervene, and he would turn up the music to drown them out. I began to refer to the gladiator as the torture chamber. I had my own memories from my family long trips in the car, because every summer my family headed south from New York to visit my mother's family in Tennessee. Now, back in the 50s, the man of the family always drove, so my parents didn't share the driving, and my father didn't want to push himself too much as the driver. So we dragged these trips out for 3 days of travel in each direction. This was back in the day when cars were not air-conditioned. It was hot and sweaty, and my brother pinched me until I complained, and both of my parents yelled at me. My dad liked to listen to news radio the entire trip. Is it any wonder that a road trip was not my idea of a good time? Here's another passage. My father, a news addict, listened to 24-hour news radio when we were in the car. By the 10th time of hearing the same story repeated, I was ready to jump out of the moving vehicle and myself become the next late-breaking news. This just in, Long Island girl jumps out of moving car. Witnesses at the scene report that she kept babbling. Coming up next, your local news. An excursion in the car with my own kids must have felt too reminiscent of the pain of my childhood road trips. Despite it all, we gave our children a good childhood. It was rich in experiences. They had pets, a pool in the yard, costumes, and creative play. They were loved by their parents and encouraged to do their best. There were so many things I could have done better, and if I had it to do over, I would use my 20/20 hindsight. But in the end, if you love them with all your heart, they're going to turn out okay. My mother also always told me she was proud of me up until the end of her life. I was 66 years old when she passed, and I asked my family, now who's going to tell me that they're proud of me? My husband and children now tell me that, and I always remember to tell them too. Being proud of each other, it's really important. My son and daughter turned into wonderful, loving adults. Well, we laugh about the stories of the missteps. Share your experiences with others, but most importantly, give yourself a hug for your best efforts to be a good parent. I would not give myself an A in motherhood, but a B+ for trying. There was an ad recently for foster parenting, and it said, "You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent." And that's true. If you think you really messed up, give yourself, and you're giving yourself a failing grade, Remember, your children want your love and acceptance, and there's almost always a road back. It's such a strong bond. It's spiritual and biological. By the age of 40, we made the decision that we were not going to have any more children, and we wrapped up the wonder years of babies and little kids. We sold the Gladiator. Those years were fun, and I'm grateful for them. When you're in the midst of all those demands of raising children, it might be hard to realize that one day you will miss it when those years are over. I've explained in prior blogs that at the end of my book, there are talking points for each chapter. The talking points at the end of this book, for this chapter are what your children might talk about on a shrink's couch, characterize your parenting style, gender stereotyping for your children. Also in each blog, I've had an add-on topic, and my add-on for this chapter is, what would you do over as a parent? As I said, I encourage sharing, so form sharing groups. Also, feel free to comment on this blog. You can do that either on the episode on blogtalkradio.com or on the event as is posted on my Facebook, which is 40 Years of PMS, spelled out F-O-R-T-Y. You can catch up on past episodes on blogtalkradio.com. You can search under books, 40 Years of PMS, or copy the link from any of the events. The next blog talk, episode 7, will be next week, Sunday, July 26th at 5. It's about chapter 7, entitled, To Hug or Not to Hug? That is the question. It sounds like a pandemic-related chapter, but actually it's about family interaction styles. Until then, I hope you all stay safe and well, and this is Notorious LGN signing off till next week.